Horses of a Different Color by Ralph Moody, University of Nebraska Press, 1968. Chapter 22, Effie to the Rescue. And it's transparent to you guys. This is the second time I've had to do this. I read this entire chapter, got done, and went to check and see if I could publish it. And there was no audio that recorded because I failed to turn on the microphone. And so it was completely blank. Father, thank you for the opportunity to re-record this. And now we're post-New Year. We only have one person left to go back to college. Richard's still here. So thank you for him being home for a couple more days. Thank you that as we get to enjoy this family time of fellowship with Izzo here at home and staying in touch with others, that we have communication and technology that gives us the opportunity to encourage, help, love one another from a distance. And I pray that everyone that hears this and reads this would be blessed in Jesus' name. Amen. I hadn't planned to stop in Cedar Bluffs on my way home, but as I was passing the telephone office, Effie flung the screen door open, looking as ruffled as a setting hen that's just been tossed off her nest. "Where in the name of common sense have you been at for the last couple of hours?" she called irritably. "I've been wearing out the wires hunting you all over Beaver Township." "Oberlin," I called back as I braked the Maxwell to a stop in a cloud of dust. "Well, come in here," she demanded, went back inside, and slammed the door behind her. I climbed out of the Maxwell, followed her inside, and asked, "What's all this shooting about, Honey Bunch?" "Don't you Honey Bunch me," she flared. "I'll swear to goodness the women folks in this township have liked to drove me out of my head with questions I couldn't answer about your butcher business. The gossip's out that you're aiming to sell meat on credit and will take your pay in nubbin corn. Have you gone clean out of your senses?" "Maybe so," I said, "but anybody in the township can have a charge account with me if he'll agree to settle no later than Thanksgiving in livestock, corn, or cash. I'll take nubbins only from the tenant farmers on the divide." Effie cooled down a little before I'd finished, sniffed, and asked, "What kind of sausage did you give the folks that sold you the hogs last time you shipped?" "The kind my mother used to make when I was a kid," I told her. "Aim to make any of it to sell?" "As much as anybody will buy," I answered. "What price is you going to charge for your stuff? Sausage and pork chops and beefsteak and the likes?" For a moment, I didn't know what to say. I'd hoped to get 15 cents a pound for the best of my leftovers, and I'd given Bivens my word that I wouldn't sell anything but buy-grade products for less than a dime. But it occurred to me that regardless of price, getting rid of my leftovers would depend on how much line call help I got from Effie, and that she'd be more enthusiastic if she had some part in the planning and felt that I was holding nothing back from her. I'd never asked her what details of my contract she learned when she listened in on the conversation between Mr. Fricky and the bank receiver, and she had never told me. But gossipmonger that she was, she'd never told anyone else, or people wouldn't still be trying to pump me for information, so I decided to talk freely. "I've been too busy to think much about prices," I told her, "and I wish you'd help me with it. I suppose you know that the railroad asked for bids on nothing but beefsteak, pork chops, and pork sausage. For that reason, all the butchers who bid less than 20 cents a pound were going to use the cheapest old sows and worn-out brood sows they could buy, and to sell their leftovers to the farm trade for whatever they could get. George and I thought they were making a mistake, because there would be more than a ton of leftovers a day, most of it so rank and tough you'd be ashamed to throw it out to the coyotes. We figured that if pork cutlets could be substituted for chops, the job could be done better and cheaper by using top-grade heifers and bacon hogs, because there wouldn't be a quarter as much leftovers, and it would all be good, tender meat." Effie had forgotten her peevishness and asked, "Is that why you shipped your hogs to Omaha and went along with them?" "That's right," I told her. "I wouldn't have stood a chance of getting the contract unless I'd been where I could find out what substitutions could be made and how low I'd have to bid. To get some other terms I needed, I had to cut my price to 15 cents a pound straight across the board. But I got pork cutlets and lard compound included in the contract and the kind of sausage I gave the folks here. The price is awfully low for beefsteak and pork chops, but it's okay for cutlets and high for that kind of sausage and lard compound, so they'll average out fairly well. I should make a good profit on the contract if I can sell all my leftovers and get reasonable prices for them." "What if you can't?" Effie asked. I grinned, shrugged my shoulders, and told her it might be better for me than all the doctors in the world. I'd be so deep in debt that I'd need a long lifetime to dig my way out. Don't talk nonsense, she snapped. I'll sell the stuff for you if the price is reasonable. What do you have to get? I'd like to average 12.5 cents a pound, I told her. If I could get 15 cents for stewed beef, hamburger, side meat, and leaf lard, I could afford to sell short ribs, sausage, and lard compound as low as a dime. What would you think about that? She turned down the corners of her mouth and told me, I think the loco weed had got to you. Lard compounds 85 cents for a 5-pound bucket in all the stores over to McCook. And why in heaven's name would you sell sausage for a dime a pound when folks are hollering to get it without asking the price? I wouldn't like the word to get out, I said. But the kind of sausage I'm going to make, the kind I gave the folks when I went to Omaha, is mostly hog fat back and beef trimmings, and my compound will be all fat back and beef suet rendered together. The suet wouldn't bring a dollar a ton in any other way. And Rudy Schneider told me a man would be lucky to get a nickel a pound for as much hog fat back as would be left over from the railroad contract. My aim is to get rid of my fat back by pricing compound and sausage low enough that I'll sell a lot of them. Humph, Effie sniffed. You aim like a drunken harvest hand. For the past 3 hours or 4 hours, I've been pestered to death by folks with the notion that your sausage is the best they ever tasted. And then this got the price, would pay 2 bits a pound for it with no questions asked. But if you go and price it at a dime, you wouldn't sell enough to wad a shotgun. And I couldn't sell it for you because everybody'd know there was something wrong with it. And it would be the same way with your lard compound. Well, I said, as near as I can figure, leftover fat back is going to make all the difference between a good profit and a big loss on this railroad contract. And unless I can find some way to get rid of mine at a reasonable price, I'll be licked. All you got to do is use your head, she told me. Why on this green earth do you reckon farmer women buy lard compound at 85 cents for a 5-pound bucket when they can get straight leaf lard for 16 cents a pound? Irene Miner says it's because the bucket comes in handy. Of course it is, you ninny, Effie told me. But them buckets ain't worth a nickel apiece. They're too flimsy for anything besides a school lunch bucket, and not big enough for anything else. What farm women want is a good, stout, galvanized bucket, one that's big enough for gathering the eggs or milking a cow, but that's not so big it'll be too heavy to lug when it's full. Unless a woman's got a cream separator, there's precious few in this township that's got them, she has to set her milk in pans to raise the cream for butter. What them women like best is a pan about 3 times as wide across the top as it is deep, made out of bright tin that won't rust easy, and that's thick enough the bottom won't buckle every time she lifts a panful. If I was you, I'd put the stuff I wanted to sell the most of into pans and buckets. Most of the women in these parts set their milk in gallon and half-gallon pans, but I'd put my sausage in 2.5-quart and 5-quart pans. That way they'd hold 5 or 10 pounds apiece, because a pint's a pound the world around. Then I'd put my lard compound and short ribs and stuff like that in 10-quart buckets, so as to sell them 20 pounds at a crack. I wouldn't think there'd be many people who'd want to buy as much as 10 pounds of sausage or 20 pounds of shortening at a time, I said. Didn't you say you aimed to leave them have credit? She asked. That's right, I said. Then I guess you don't know how farm women work as good as the butcher ought to, she said. What with thrashing season commencing any day now, and the fall plowing and sowing to be done, and the corn to be shucked as soon as frost hits, there'll be a heap of hired hands to feed between now and Thanksgiving time, and these women folks will buy whatever they have to get a pan that catches their eye or a good milk bucket the right size. That is, they will if they think the bucket or the pan is free and they don't have to pay cash for the stuff they buy. How much would you charge for sausages you sold in pans and lard compound by the bucket, I asked. Different prices only make it harder for women folks to make up their minds, she told me. The more of a thing I wanted to sell, the better the pan or bucket or dish I'd put it into, but I wouldn't have more than 2 prices, one for steak and chops and roasts, and another for everything else. Then I'll have only 1 price, I said, because with a contract like mine, I won't have any steaks or chops or roasts to sell. Don't be a jackass, Effie scolded. You're not fool enough to think though these women will come to you for the stuff you want to get rid of when they have to drive to McCook or Oberlin for the rest of their meat, do you? If you want to their trade, you'll have to sell them the stuff they want right along with the stuff you want to get shut of. I can see what you mean, I told her, but I can't see where it would do me any good. A hog is less than 1/4 ham, steaks, and chops, and for every pound of those I sell, I'll be stuck with 2 pounds of fat pack to get rid of. "Oh, fiddlestick," she broke in. "If you butcher top grade bacon hogs like you said you was going to, the backs will be lean enough that most farmer folks will want to buy them for side meat. And if you charge 20 cents a pound for steak and chops and the likes, you'll head the folks off from buying too much of them things. Don't you think 20 cents is pretty high, considering that I'm going to get only 15 cents from the railroad?" I asked. The folks couldn't do no better in McCook or Oberlin, could they? She asked in reply. "Well, maybe not for the same grade of meat," I said, "but buttons for billy goats," she snapped. "Now, skedaddle out of here and see what kind of milk buckets and pans you can find in McCook that look real nice but don't cost too much. Get least weighs 10 dozen pans of both sizes and 5 dozen buckets. I've got a hunch we're going to need them. I won't put outline calls till you get back, so don't stop to tell no long stories." That, quote, "we're going to need them," end quote, took a lot of worry off my mind, and I headed for McCook as fast as the old Maxwell would go. In the department store, I found sturdy, brightly tinned 2.5 and 5-quart pans and 10-quart galvanized buckets that were light in weight but not flimsy, with good stout bales. Rubber stamped in purple ink on the bottom of the large pans was a big 25 cents, on the smaller ones 15 cents, and on the buckets 40 cents. After a little haggling, the store manager agreed to give me a 25% discount if I'd take 2 gross of pans and 1/2 a gross of buckets. Then he gave me the same discount on a dozen galvanized wash tubs we needed for storing cut meat, sausage, and hamburger in the refrigerator. By the time I'd picked up my shipment of spices and stale bread at the express office, the old Maxwell was loaded so full there was barely room for me to squeeze in behind the wheel, and I had to drive slowly all the way home. I stopped there just long enough to unload, then took a bucket and a pan of each size up to show Effie. As I pulled to a stop in front of her office, she stepped into the doorway and called, "Land sakes alive, what took you so long? These women folks haven't let up on me for a blessed minute. What luck did you have?" "Pretty good," I called back and held up a bucket so she'd be sure to see the 40-cent mark on the bottom. "Jump in, Jehoshaphat," she exclaimed. "Have you took leave of your senses altogether? You can't afford that kind of stuff in place of paper and twine." "Sure I can," I said, holding up the pans with the price marks toward her. "I bought 6 dozen buckets and 24 dozen pans like these." "You didn't go and pay 15 cents and a quarter apiece for them pans, did you?" she demanded. "Good lands, I'd ought to have had better sense to leave you go alone. Well, fetch them in here so I can see how bad you got stuck. I'll swear to goodness every line on the switchboard has been buzzing like a bee in a bottle ever since you left." When I went into the little office, on every light on the switchboard was blinking, a sure sign that impatient women were jiggling receivers on every line in the township, and with each blink of a light, a buzzer shuddered and whined. Effie had plugged the cord of her headset into one of the line jacks and was saying irritably, "Yes, Maddie, I know he's back from McCook, but there's nothing I can tell you yet. Soon as ever there is, I'll put out line calls, like I've been saying for the past 2 hours." She broke the connection with a yank of the cord, stripped off her headset, and told me, "A body can't hear herself think with all this racket going on. Pull the switch on that battery, will you, bud, so we can get down to business in peace?" The whole Beaver Township telephone system was powered by a single brine battery. So when I pulled the switch, the lights on the switchboard stopped blinking, and the buzzers became mute. Effie blew out her breath in a long whisht and mopped the sweat off her forehead. "Well," she said, "I hope nobody's building catch a fire while I've got them lines killed. But if I'd had to have listened to that hullabaloo for another 5 minutes, it would have drove me stark staring crazy. Now, let me have a look at them buckets and pans you bought." After she'd examined each piece thoroughly and tested its weight by bouncing it on her hand, she looked up at me and said, "They're mighty nice stuff, all right, and I wouldn't mind having a set of them my own self. But they're a little too costive to give away with sausage and lard compound and the likes of them." "No, they're not," I told her. "I got a 25% discount by taking them in gross and half gross lots. So the buckets were only 30 cents a piece, and that's just 1.5 cents a pound on 20 pounds of shortening." "What'll it come to on stuff in the pans?" she asked. 2.25 cents a pound in the small ones," I said, "but that less than 2 cents in the big ones." "Lucky it wasn't the other ways about," she said, looking back at the pans again. "No woman with more than 1 or 2 cows wants to mess around setting milk to rise in a whole raft of little pans if she can get good big ones by just buying twice as much sausage or whatever at one time. That is, if she's buying on credit. And the more of anything a woman's got in her larder, the more of it she's bound to use. If it was me doing it, I wouldn't put up shortening in nothing but buckets or wrapped in paper if somebody wanted less than 20 pounds. I wouldn't put nothing but sausage in pans. That is, hold your horse a minute. Didn't you tell me you was going to render out most of the fat back you didn't make into sausage? That's right, I said. Then you'll have cracklings till you can't rest, won't you? I suppose I will, I said. But they'll make awfully good hog feed. Hog feed's fiddlestick, she sputtered. Why don't you use your head a bit before you go throwing stuff out to the hogs? Don't you know that almost everybody likes to make a batch of crackling bread once in a while? And some folks salt cracklings and nibble on them of an evening like they was peanuts. Don't let me forget to say something about that when I make the line calls. And it's a cinch that everybody will want all the free pans and buckets they can get. If I was you, I'd sell one of them big pans heaping full of cracklings for 50 cents or a bucket full for a dollar. And, you know, there's lots of German folks hereabouts, and they make sausage out of critters' heads and insides. Why don't you sell the whole works from a heifer or a hog, liver, lights, head, heart, and kidneys, bucket and all, for a dollar? Elsewise, you'll have to give that kind of stuff away or throw it out. How about pig's feet and ham hocks, I asked. Would you put those in pans or buckets? I'd wrap them up in paper, she told me. You can get a nickel a piece for pig's feet and a dime for hocks anyways, and you couldn't get a penny more if you was to put them in a 30-cent bucket. It's women folks that buys the meat, and if you aim to make any money doing business with them, you'll have to learn to use your head. Well, I've never had much experience doing business with women, I said, and it's a little late for me to start learning to use my head. What I need is you for a partner. Humph, she jeered. And I need a partner that's already up to his neck in debt like I need a broken leg. Then she turned serious again and told me, I was only joshing you, bud, and didn't aim to poke you on that hurt place. You don't need a partner no more, and your cat needs two tails, but I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll put out line calls and take phone orders for you, and you can keep guying me in fresh meat if you have a mind to. Is that a deal? You bet your bones it's a deal, I told her, kissed a finger and touched it to the end of her nose. Well, then, she said as she picked up her headset, switch that battery back on and get on out of here. I'll put out line calls right away and give you a ring as soon as ever I get all the orders in. What time on Sunday should I tell folks they can come for their stuff? Oh, it doesn't matter, I said. I'll be around the place all day and all evening. Don't be a fool, she told me. If we don't stop him right at the start, some of these women folks will devil you to death. Come and buy any time from sun up till midnight for a pound of spare ribs or a bone for the dog. That Italian being scared of his own shadow the way he is, how do you reckon you'd get away to do any trading? I'm going to tell the folks that the only hours you'll be open for meat business are from 6 to 8 on weekday evenings and 10 to 1 o'clock on Sundays. That way they'll have a chance to come after supper, and then that goes to church can stop by on their way home. It'll save time for all hands, and you won't sell a nickel's worth less than you would the other way around. Now, get out of here. Most of the heifers I'd bought were to be delivered when the sellers came to haul hogs on Saturday. But I'd arranged to have four delivered that afternoon. As soon as they arrived, we picked out the fattest one and butchered her right away. Accordingly, Nick did most of the work. He was an expert at it, and as always, the sight and smell of slaughtering nauseated me. After the job was finished, he stayed to scrub down the slaughterhouse while I went to start supper. The telephone was ringing wildly, and when I picked up the receiver, Effie's voice came over the wire irritably. Where in the name of common sense have you been for the past hour? I was just about to send Guy over to find out if that Italian had cut your throat, or if the both of you was froze to death in the icebox. I've been out to the slaughterhouse, I said. We had to do some butchering so we'd be ready for Sunday's business. Well, I hope to goodness you've done a plenty of it, she told me proudly. I've got orders enough to choke a billy goat. Nellie Moss wants a bucket of that shortening and a pan of sausage and 5 pounds of beefsteak and... Hold it, Effie, I broke in. All I need to know right now is how much sausage and shortening to get ready. Will you add up the totals and call me back? I'll bring you some pork chops after supper and pick up the separate orders then. I barely had the fire started when she called back. Well, here's your totals, she told me. But land knows how long they'll be good for. There's still orders coming in faster than I can write them down. Let's see. It's 11 big pans of sausage and 6 little ones and 18 buckets of shortening. Whew, I whistled. That'll be 140 pounds of sausage and 360 of shortening. I told you what would happen if you put the stuff into free milk pans and buckets, didn't I? She gloated. There's more calls coming in, so I got to ring off now. But listen, bud, when you come up for the orders, bring a little liver for my cat, will you? She's crazy about it. As soon as we'd eaten supper, Nick and I rounded up our three biggest hogs and had driven them to the slaughterhouse when he stepped in front of me and said, "I take now." With my squeamish stomach, I was glad enough to have him take over the slaughtering. The pork he'd butchered that morning was thoroughly chilled, so I cut half a dozen thick loin chops, wrapped a pound of liver, packed them in one of the buckets, and drove up to the telephone office. It was hard to tell whether Effie was more pleased with the bucket, the chops, the liver for her cat, or the orders she'd taken. "I'm already up to my neck in orders," she told me, "and there's still more dribbling in. Besides, there's 40 things I've got to find out from you. First off, can folks outside the township have charge accounts if they've been doing livestock business with you? It seems like the news has leaked out and they're calling in from all over." "Anybody with good credit can have a charge account if he'll agree to settle up by Thanksgiving," I told her. "Well then," she told me happily, "I've got orders for 80 pounds more sausage and 5 buckets of shortening, along with 451 pounds of other stuff." I was too astonished to speak for a moment, but as soon as I'd collected my wits, I asked, "For heaven's sakes, Effie, did you blackmail people into giving your orders? I didn't think there was that much meat business in Decatur County." "You didn't do much thinking then," she told me smugly. "Farmers won't do their own butchering leastways in summer if they can buy meat on credit for 15 cents a pound with free buckets and pans thrown in. But how you're going to make a profit on it, the price hogs have gone to, is more than I can figure out. According to the 6 o'clock broadcast, the top grade of hogs brought $11.50 at Kansas this morning." I reminded her I'd bought my hogs before the market went up and told her I'd come out all right on my prices if she kept on getting me shortening orders the way she started out. Then I hurried home and got back to work. By the time Nick had finished dressing the three hogs and scrubbed down the slaughterhouse, I'd broken down the pork carcasses from the refrigerator, ready for cutting into chops and cutlets, side meat slabs, spare ribs, and scraps for making sausage. It was past 10 o'clock before we'd scrubbed the cutting room and gone to bed, but we were up, had eaten breakfast, and were back at work by 4 the next morning. In doing it, we established a pattern that we seldom broke. For the hours from 4 to 7 were the coolest of the day. Meat could safely be kept out of the refrigerator longer, remained firmer during the processing, and the work went faster. The bandsaw with its semi-automatic carriage made cutting steaks, chops, and cutlets a simple matter, and the closer to the time of sale they were cut, the fresher they would appear. As we broke down the carcasses of the hogs slaughtered the day before, we hung the hams, shoulders, loins, and side meat slabs back in the refrigerator. Then Nick diced fat back for rendering while I boned leftovers for sausage. Boning a neck is rather tricky business for an inexpert butcher, but I soon discovered that it required little skill if I first cut it into inch-thick slices with the saw. By 8 o'clock, we had the hog carcasses processed, except for sawing chops and cutlets. But Effie had taken orders for so much shortening and sausage that we'd have to kill another beef and 2 more hogs before we could fill the expected railroad order. We had driven 2 enormous sows into the slaughterhouse chute when Nick again stepped in front of me and said, "I take you now." There was a certain finality in his voice, as much as to say, "This is my end of the business. You stay out of it." From that time on, I never went into the slaughterhouse except to show it to visitors when it wasn't in use, and I always found it scrubbed spotlessly clean. I returned to the cutting room, put on my white coat and apron, and had started breaking down a beef four-quarter when the McCook taxi clattered into the yard. Although I hadn't expected him so early, I knew it would be Mr. Donovan, so went out to meet him. He was cordial and friendly, but seemed embarrassed at having to come make the inspection. His only purpose, he told me, was to make sure the premises were clean enough and the refrigeration sufficient that there would be no danger of ptomaine. I told him I was glad he'd come, then led the way to the cutting room door and flung it open. For a moment or two, he stood looking into the room with his mouth half open. Then he said, almost reverently, "Glory be." The inspection took no more than 10 minutes, with Mr. Donovan exclaiming over almost everything I showed him. When we'd finished the round, he told me, "I'm that sorry, lad. I should have told you right at the outset that you didn't need the fancy layout the likes of this. It's a shame you've gone to so much expense, and for only a 4 months' business. Tell me, whatever will you do with it when the job is finished and done with? You can't move a refrigerator like that one, or a slaughterhouse is cemented tight to the ground." There was no reason for telling him that the whole setup had cost only a shade more than $1,000, or that it looked as though The farmer business would considerably exceed the railroad contract. So I said, if my luck holds out until Thanksgiving the way it's been running for the past month, I have an idea the setup will have paid for itself, so I'm not going to worry about it. After the inspection, Mr. Donovan asked if I'd mind driving him to Danbury, Nebraska, 10 miles down Beaver Valley and beyond the railroad washout. On the way, he told me that the equipment and commissary train had arrived and that the work train would bring the construction crew Sunday forenoon. He said the camp would be mobile, always at railhead, and as the track was reconstructed westward, and it was there that I would make my deliveries. As we neared Danbury, I could see that the shipping pens were crowded with horses and mules. A dozen carloads of grading and track laying equipment were lined up on the siding, and beyond them stood three kitchen and bakery cars. At one of the kitchens, Mr. Donovan introduced me to the chief steward, an enormous, good-natured Irishman named Tim. When I asked if he could give me his meat order for the first three meals, he told me, "Surest thing you know. The lads here will get here with their bellies as empty as their pockets, and for a couple of days they'll eat a pound or more of meat at a meal. I'll be needing 200 pounds of pork chops for a Sunday dinner, the same beefsteak for supper, and for Monday's breakfast, you'd best make it 150 pounds of pork chops and 50 of sausage. Fetch it Sunday morning and bring 100 pounds of lard for the bakers." I was worried by the proportions of pork to beef and by Tim's ordering chops and lard. But before I could say anything, Mr. Donovan explained that the contract called for cutlets rather than chops and shortening instead of lard. Then he said that my sausage was the tastiest he'd ever eaten, and suggested that Tim increase his order to 100 pounds. Breathing more easily, I thanked Mr. Donovan for his kindness and Tim for his order, then got away as soon as I could. This is a great relationship thing with Ralph and Effie and Nick and what he's able to do, and and all the advice and counsel he gets from Effie on how to make sure he sells his materials. I love you guys.